From the backwoods and the swamp waters of the Sunshine State and all across America and the world, this is The Big and Wild Outdoors with your host, Braden Gunn, Jonathan Swindle, and Glenn Kinman.
And good morning, everybody. Happy Easter. That's right. It is Easter weekend, a beautiful weekend to be outside doing something besides in the studio. But we're just fortunate to be able to sit here behind the mics and share our past week's experiences. And in the studio this morning is not Braden Gunn.
Yeah, can I say it?
Okay, go ahead.
Since I got harangued for the last, you know, how many weeks, you know, Braden Gunn's not here. This is Jonathan Swindle. Glenn Kinman.
And our special guest.
And we got the man.
That's why Braden didn't show up.
The
He's, what? The FWC showing up? I wonder if they're coming to check me out from that violation 1,500 years ago.
Well, is the statute of limitations still?
Yeah, but in the studio with us is Officer
and Nick's
Nick.
And over here already rolling his eyes.
With the FWC. Good morning.
Good morning, guys.
I'm glad you could get up this early and come hang out with us. I know you're used to early hours, but... Your early hours are generally in the woods or doing something spectacular.
That's right. It's nice. It's a little weird to be inside, but it's nice to be back up. It's a nice easy. It was an easy drive over. So
yeah, it is.
Thank you guys for having me back.
It's our pleasure. It is always a good drive when you're coming across the Gandy and you see all the boats behind the trucks and getting pulled into the boat ramp or into the bait house there.
Or
and
the guys pulling the boat see the FWC truck come rolling by like,
Well, make sure you got it out there. Make sure our life jackets are up to date and we have plenty on the boat. That's the number one thing that's very important this time, every time of the year. As soon as that boat gets to the water, you always should have your flotation. Make sure you have all your safety gear in check. And I'll get to a question I do have with you. It's always been my biggest dilemma, me personally, every time I get my stuff out to get in the boat, so we'll get to that. But again, this is Easter weekend, and Braden is up in California. He'll be back tomorrow. As long as nobody fires any nukes anywhere, I think everything will be all right. He'll make it back safe. But that's a big event that's taking place here on our Easter weekend, and if you're looking for something to do, and you're not going to be out doing any turkey hunting, because turkey hunting's coming to an end. We got another week left here.
23rd.
And so if you're not going to get out and do anything, you want to come out, we're having our crucifixion reenactment there at Countryside. You can come on out. Sunrise service in the morning. Instead of calling in your bird, you can come out and eat some breakfast with us.
There
Jonathan.
You go.
Jonathan.
What?
Come eat some breakfast. Bring some of that turkey that you've been shooting all week long.
No. I've been shooting more bull than I have turkeys.
Oh, my gosh.
I've shot carryover. Some hogs, but that's, yeah.
Are you saying it's going to be a carryover show, shooting more bull?
Pretty much.
Be a good show then.
No. This is a show, you know, the clients that I had this week, I can say it like this. This will be a what not to do show.
Well, you only have one more week to listen, so get out and don't do what Jonathan's done. Apparently it's done.
I could tell you all what not to do. That's pretty much been my luck this year.
It makes two of us.
Yeah. Bill George apparently has a horseshoe stuck up his rear end, but apparently...
Well, he's up there with there's probably about 50 of them up there hunting, apparently, up in the Green Swamp area. I'm not sure how many's there, but there was quite a few. He probably had the biggest Taj Mahal campsite there at the Green Swamp site.
Bill's like some of the other people we know in that rich, long Green Swamp area that you know whose campsite you're in when you roll up in there.
His campsite was so big that they implemented the no burn, no fires in Polk County, and told him, pack up your stuff and get out of here, young man. Yeah, they were concerned about that with the wildfires and everything else.
Well, we just put in the propane pit over here. What the heck?
Is there still a lot of people camping over there around the Green Swamp, or did they actually have everybody move out?
To my knowledge, there's still some people out there. But, I mean, we're under state of emergency with the wildfires, though.
Yeah, that's something that's... We all have to take a little serious. Let's go to the phones this morning. I already have a call early. Somebody, maybe it's Braden or something from California. Good morning. Who's this?
Me?
It's me.
Hey, guys. This is Jonathan North from the Strawberry Crest Bass Fishing Team. How are y'all doing?
Jonathan North, how did y'all do? We're doing great. How did y'all do last week? You're calling to tell us that you're in the Nationals now? Y'all Strawberry Crest to be representing the state of Florida or what?
Well, I wish we were going to Nationals. So far, we didn't qualify our last tournament, but we have one more state tournament to qualify. and it's actually on Lake Okeechobee, which is one of our favorites.
Now, it's probably one of everybody's favorites in the state of Florida that goes down there to do any kind of fishing. And I know that, what was it, 2 years ago, that's where you guys pulled it all out and two teams went to Nationals?
Yes, sir. Hopefully we can do all that again.
Well, we're pulling for you. Well, last week, where were y'all at fishing last week for your tournament?
We were at the Harris Chain of Lakes. We were fishing out of Venetian Gardens. And we had a couple of teams that did pretty good, but nobody qualified for Nationals.
Now, what is it that it takes to qualify? What is it that you actually have to do? Win the tournament outright? Well, or
you have to win it, or you have to qualify for or be Team of the Year. In which we have a team right now that's actually, and in this other series we're doing, they're in the lead for a Team of the Year. With me and I'm actually fishing a tournament right now on the Winter Haven Chain. I got bass schooling all over me.
There you go.
Schooling some small yearlings, or you got some really nice ones?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm going to throw in the middle of them and try to catch one.
Get after it.
Well, thanks for the distraction, man.
Oh, yeah.
So on Winter Haven, how did you end up doing?
Well, me and Russell, my partner, we probably got top 25. We only caught three fish a day, which is pretty bad compared to what a lot of teams did. A team came in with 20 pounds the first day. Another team came in with 16, 17 pounds the second day. I mean, some teams did amazing. But we just couldn't get on them like that. Whenever it's your time, you know?
Now, the team that really produced the numbers in the fish, are they kind of like the hometown favorites, or were they guys that was just like you coming from a distance that really doesn't have a lot of experience on the Winter Haven Chain, or was that what it was?
No, sir. It was actually just, I know the team that did really, or they didn't qualify for Nationals, but they got third. And the first day, they came in with almost 20 pounds. And they did their work. They did their homework. They found a big fish on bed the first day of pre-fishing and left her alone and saved it for the last day. And they caught her on the last day, came in with almost 20 pounds, which that was the biggest bag of the whole tournament.
Wow, that is a great catch. Now, what was your bait? What was you using versus what they were using?
We were actually, let me think, what were we using? I forgot. No, we found fish in lily pads, and we were throwing worms to the lily pads and dragging the worm off and letting it fall right there on the edge, and that's where most of our fish were eating it, right there.
Wow. So, now what was your favorite? What was the color? Was it using purple or black and blue?
Oh, no, sir. My favorite color by far is red bug.
The red bug is, now mine is, I like that June bug red. Maybe you should have used that.
Oh yeah, the June bug red, that's a good color too. It's something about that red bug, it's something that not a lot of people throw, and it works everywhere for me. Even today at the Winter Haven Chain of Lakes, that's what I'm throwing, is a red bug speed worm.
Well, have you caught one yet? I've been waiting to hear all the splashing and the dropping of the phone into the lake.
No, he's got a headset.
No, sir, we haven't caught anything yet this morning. We're fishing offshore in some eelgrass and hydrilla, throwing deep diving crankbaits and gravel traps and spinner baits.
Well, I can tell you this. This past week, a good friend of mine, he was out on a nice lake that he took me to a couple weeks back, and his bait was the fluke with the salt and pepper with a little chartreuse on the tail. And he said
it was a fluke because he caught a fish.
Well, it probably was a combination of the two, but he said it would hit the water, and it would no lead. He wasn't using no weight on it. It was just letting it free dive on its own. And he said he just couldn't keep them off. It wore him out. So maybe you ought to try that.
A fluke. I love throwing flukes. That's one of my favorite baits right there. A weightless watermelon feed fluke. They tear it up anywhere you go.
Well, you should have been using it last week.
I threw it. They just weren't eating it.
Oh, my goodness. I can tell you're very distracted. But so what's the next in Okeechobee? What's the date for that tournament?
May 6th and 7th. It's a two-day tournament. It's on the north end of Lake Okeechobee. And it's really not that – it's not too far from us. It's probably an hour further than Camp Mac.
Well, it should be a good time. But I tell you, did you see this past week where a young man caught a 16.75-pound bass?
A 16.75-pound bass. Where at?
I can't tell you that. You're going to have to listen to the show because he's going to be calling the show a little bit later on this morning to give us all the details on it. But I can tell you what, if you want to see what it looks like, you go to myfwc.com, look at the news release, and you can see all the picture you can stand.
God.
That's an absolute giant right there.
That's what it is. Well, Jonathan, thanks for the call this morning, man. Get out there and do some good. Let us know. Share some pictures. And good luck with that qualifying.
Yes, sir. Y'all have a good day, guys.
All right, you too.
Good luck, buddy.
All right, we are Week in Wild Outdoors. Got to take a quick break. Thank you, Load Runner Trailers and G5 Outdoors. And we'll be right back.
Did you know the biggest Ford truck dealer in the entire southeastern United States is right here, close to you? Which dealership? The answer shouldn't surprise you. Brandon Ford is the largest volume F-Series truck dealer in the Southeast, and the numbers don't lie. Brandon Ford sells more F-150s, more Super Duties, more lifted trucks, 4x4s, and diesels. And when a dealership sells more, there's always a reason, like the guaranteed lowest Ford truck prices, or one of the largest Ford truck inventories in America, with over 500 trucks available and on sale, or their award-winning sales team with years of experience who knows these trucks inside and out. Every day when businesses or customers need a truck, they choose Brandon Ford because Brandon Ford stocks more, sells more, and sells for less. So when you're ready for a truck, come see us at Highway 60 and 301 in Tampa, the largest volume Ford F-Series dealer in the entire southeastern United States, 24/7 at BrandonFord.com. If you want to pay less for a Ford truck, that's our business.
It's time to work smarter, not harder, with Mahindra, the toughest tractor on earth that doesn't rely on diesel exhaust fluids or diesel particle filters to meet Tier 4 emission standards. Right now you can get up to $6,500 cash back or zero interest up to 84 months, plus a 7-year powertrain warranty on every Mahindra tractor. Save right now on the world's number one selling tractor, Mahindra.
Head over to Grove Equipment Services on State Road 60 in Bartow and East Baker Street in Plant City today for great tractor and utility vehicle packages, and learn more about the toughest tractors on earth at groveequipment.biz. Offer with approved credit. See dealer for details. Program restrictions may apply.
Join Mark Charles Wednesday nights at 11:05 for Outside Interference Wrestling Radio. Mark Charles hosts guest appearances by pro wrestling's biggest stars and takes your listener phone calls to get your take on the latest current events in the world of professional wrestling. Tampa Bay's Business Address Money Talk 1010 dims the lights for Outside Interference Wrestling Radio every Wednesday night at 11:05 p.m. Highlights and interviews on OutsideInterferenceRadio.com.
Ace Heating and Cooling is a family-owned and operated business that gives honest, reliable, and affordable AC repair and maintenance on all makes and models of air conditioners for residential and commercial. Ace always gives free estimates on new installations and replacements, and they send out technicians, ladies and gentlemen, not salespeople, so you're going to get flat rate pricing, and you'll know exactly what it's going to cost you before they even get ready to do the job. Ace Heating and Cooling evaluates your AC based on your home, not your wallet. That's right. For your office or for your home, you need to give Ace Heating and Cooling a call today and let them do what they do best for you. 813-657-8818. 813-657-8818. It's Ace Heating and Cooling.
The Big and Wild Outdoors.
The family-owned and operated Smokin' Aces Steakhouse offers their award-winning barbecue in Plant City, Florida. If you're looking for finger-looking good, stick-to-your-ribs barbecue, then Smokin' Aces Steakhouse is where it's at. Top-rated by TripAdvisor, KCBS Registered, Reader's Choice Award winner, and Best Taste of Plant City winner for 2 years. Smokin' Aces Barbecue. It's all good.
And welcome back. This is Big and Wild Outdoors. That was a good call this morning already. Jonathan out just bragging and rubbing it in as out on the water, catching him some fish or attempting to, and getting all geared up for the Lake Okeechobee final lake to qualify for the National.
Do you want me to let you in on a secret that you're going to look at me and think that I either something, I'm not a Floridian?
All right, what's your secret?
I have never fished Okeechobee. I've been down there a million times, and I've never been on that lake.
Well, you missed out, man.
So
you should have been fishing while you was there. Always take your fishing pole, no matter what you're doing, duck hunting, going hog hunting, whatever the case is.
Most of the time I was down there, it was working cows or working when I was working for the office or something like that. So I was kind of pigeonholed as far as being able to.
Wow. Well, again, in the studio this morning is with us Nick with the FWC, and he's here to answer a few of our questions during the show. And if you have a question you'd like to ask him, feel free to give us a call at 888-404-1010. 888-404-1010 if you're driving along and you're thinking about something that it's kind of one of the gray areas that you're always got that. Well, what if I did this with Bill George not in the studio and Braden not here to really run you through the ringer? Maybe someone out there listening this morning may have one of those
type of questions for him when we get into stuff.
Well, we can get in anything you want to. But as I mentioned before we went to the break, Dominic down there in Esther, I guess that's how you pronounce it, just outside of Fort Myers. He's the gentleman that caught that 16.75-pound bass this past week. And luckily for him, he was part of the trophy catch program here to catch and release. And you take the picture. You have to have a scale kind of showing the weight, everything in place, and you submit your picture. And you could win that Phoenix bass boat at the end of the draw. And, of course, there are several different other prizes that they put into the hat for everyone that participates in that. And, of course, I know, Nick, you said, man, you feel like you was robbed because that program wasn't around when you was a kid, and neither was all these bass fishing clubs that are part of the high school program.
Yeah, there's a ton of different programs. The trophy catch program, the licenses for a discounted rate around Christmas time, the lifetime licenses. You know, didn't seem till I turned 28 that if you're 21 or under, you get half off your licenses for a lifetime around Christmas time. But the trophy catch is that's ridiculous. That's a great deal.
It's a great program, and
absolutely.
And you know, it was one of them things. And I don't want to get too much into this guy's story, but how many fish are caught from the bank? You think you got to have the bass boat, you get out there, but it's usually somebody like this guy, Dominic, young kid, a young man, and Jonathan Norton, them guys, they got all the time to fish, because I always felt like, well, I'm going to get my job, I'm going to start my career, I'm going to get this, I'm going to take that, I'm going to have 40 of these, and then I'm going to go fishing every weekend, and that's totally, totally opposite.
Wrong.
And what happens?
If you go look on the website, the Trophy Catch website right now, it'll show you kind of like a chronological sequence of all these different pictures. There is probably hundreds in the last 2 months. I have to keep clicking through the page. I was looking for Dominic's fish on there, and it's got a little link to it on the front page. But if I went through it by date, there's probably, 200 fish between now and March 18th that people have caught that qualify for, either the Lunker Club, Trophy Club, or Hall of Fame Club. So pretty cool.
How many times, and like what you're saying, how many times have you seen people go up there that the buddies we have on Facebook, the people we know on Facebook, or anywhere else, that what are they doing after work at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock? What do you start seeing? Pictures of them out there, like you said, at a creek somewhere or just a little pond, so they're catching fish.
Yeah, and that trophy catch program, the lady that runs that side of it, we've had her on the show before, and what a great program that the state of Florida adopted. And the first year was probably the year that I could have been in contingents for anything, for the small bass, big bass, medium bass, or just a good laugh. But now that it has really taken off. It was kind of a slow the first 2 years, but now especially the first year that the program took place, like you was talking about, the amount of people that are participating.
It doesn't
cost you anything. Nothing. It's a free membership. All you got to do is go in, sign up.
Yep. All you have to do is register. And the only real requirement is you get one good picture of that fish on a scale. It's got to be clear. The whole fish has to be in the picture on a scale showing the weight. But any good pictures on, after that, that's adding to how verified it is.
It sounds to me like something that somebody could do at the Panfish Challenge.
Well, during the Panfish Challenge, that's that bluegill shellcracker or whatever. And if you was to catch a big bass, then
you're like I am. We're opportunistic kind of people. And if we're just bumping along, busting brim and shellcrackers off the bed, and a big largemouth just happens to show up, and
why not? You just got to be ready. You want to be able to.
You're sitting.
But you want to be registered, though. That's one of the key things. You got to be registered.
Well, that's what I'm getting
at. For the trophy catch prior to you catching the fish.
Make sure you get yourself registered, get everything set up. So if that opportunity presents itself, then here you go.
It's always better to be prepared, that's for sure. Is it not, Officer Nick?
That's right.
Be prepared.
Be legal.
Be legal. Be a
not illegal.
Well, with the trophy catch, it's hard to be illegal. The only way you could really get in trouble with that is if you manipulate the scales and the pitchers, and they really come in and, okay. and found that to be the case. Now we're not.
Really, it's a competition, really. I mean, you know that there's somebody out there that's going to try it.
Somebody's trying
later.
To get an edge somewhere, but somebody's I mean that's why you're getting pictures of the whole fish with the girth and the length measurement, so a biologist can say there might be some lead in that thing's belly, and maybe not.
And maybe not, but there's always that thought in the back of everybody's mind.
That's an obese fish. Yeah. It needs to go on a diet.
And I don't know how exactly they would determine that too well, but let's go to the phones. Good morning, Will. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's turkey season's up, ain't it?
23rd.
You got one more weekend to get it done after this next weekend.
Yeah, I talked to an old boy this morning. I got up at like 5 in the morning and went down to walked up to the local store and old boy was dressed up. He's dressed for bear. I'm like, what are you doing, swamping? He goes, no, we got a turkey. He's going to go turkey hunting. I'm like, good luck, because that's about a hard bird to get a hold of.
They can be, and apparently that's true, because Jonathan, apparently, he's not shared his hunt this past week, but I think he's got the big zero on his back. So,
I mean that bird's more likely to track you down while you're trying to track him down.
Oh,
I mean,
that's educated.
I mean, they got a small brain, man, but it works good for a turkey head, I guess.
It definitely works good for a turkey
to
head.
Their size.
I could tell you, Will, down there in Highlands County where you call them, where you're living at, I mean, that's really a turkey haven down there for you guys. I would definitely be out there this morning, too.
Yeah, they don't poke around too much. I don't see them too much. There's too much activity around here. But I have seen them on I saw one on 27 that looked like he was hitchhiking or something once. I'm like, look at this damn turkey, Osceola turkey running around looking.
Yeah, he's
I don't know
out
what
there,
he was doing.
Yeah, he's out there hitchhiking trying to find him a lady friend, but.
he's looking for a lady friend, or I don't know if it was him or a her. We just drove by. But we see deer once in a while up here too. We got this little scrawny deer, but it ain't like you're gonna see up in Arkansas or the Dakotas or anything. But we get them. They're little Florida deer. I think they're anorexic or something. But I've seen deer in California. When I lived in Northern California, they could hop a 7-foot fence. I mean, they were just vicious.
Well, these deer here in the state of Florida, they just got so much after them. I mean, you got the mosquitoes that really hound them a lot, and the heat. I tell you, it's a tough life for a deer.
The ticks.
I'm surprised we even have deer down here. We got a fox that runs around once in a while, a red fox. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, you're down there where there's a lot of game. Well, you just got to get out there a little bit further into the swamp to find them. Get off that street.
We got a bog up here, and I accidentally stepped in it one night. And I was walking around with a lady friend, and let me tell you, I ended up like knee deep real quick and messed up my boots and all kinds of just nastiness going on. But I was taking a walk down 27 yesterday, taking my friend to the hospital, and I saw a couple copperheads that looked like they were getting. They're going to get their thing going. It gave me the heebie-jeebies.
Well, you better watch what you're doing down there and definitely be aware of your surroundings at all times. But, Will, you have a good morning. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, all right now.
Take care, brother.
Yeah, he's one of our faithful down there in the Sebring. Ain't a whole lot to do for Will down there.
You got to love it, man.
I tell you, that's down there in part of the neck of the woods. I know a little bit north of where you grew up and – where you first started out in your career at the FWC, but
Nick probably knows Will.
I've driven through Sebring. It doesn't take much time on the way back and forth when we were getting moved over. But.
Yeah, man.
Now that's one of those areas of the state of Florida. I mean, when you drive anywhere in the state, you'll find that beautiful lake or the pristine hammocks that you can drive by in certain areas. But to me, as a kid, that I spent hundreds of hours. Down here in Sebring, Lurita, down here on the Kissimmee River, Istapogue, and all that. It's just, to me, so that's my kind of my that's my favorite spot of all places to really go and do some fishing. I know I talk about Panasoffkee, but when you plant your teeth in the dirt down there as much as I have as a young kid, camping many, many hours with my dad all through there.
Yep.
That's kind of when Will calls, I know he's a, you know, he doesn't really get out there and do a whole lot of fishing, but he kind of one of the guys that just ignites my memories in that, from that general area of Florida.
It's like real, that's old Florida. That's real Florida. You know, from Kissimmee all the way down to like Fish Eating Creek and all that. That's what you're talking about.
And that Fish Eating Creek was another one of them places. Growing up, get out and do a little, you know, my dad was a big, he liked to wade fishing through some of that area. And I was like, man, are you crazy?
Well, it's one
the
of those
water moccasins in this
It's
place.
One of them places like what you were talking about. You could go out there and pull over on the side of the road and any of the creeks or streams or anything like that that were right there, you more than likely you had a chance of catching fish because there was a bunch there.
And every little box culvert and little footbridge you see as you back in the day on those little small roads, there was always somebody pulled over and doing that kind of fishing.
Cane pole, doing something. I remember Sebring, you're talking about Sebring. I remember working in turkeys. We used to do some work when I worked for the office at the plant right there next to the track. There's a little power plant right there. And I went out there one morning. They had an outage going on. They were fixing stuff. And I was there right at daylight. And somebody was out there. And I don't know if it was one of the sporting cars or the Rolex cars or something like that. And there's a block of woods between the track or right by the track and the power plant. Every time that guy would come by, it was a springtime like this, of course. And every time he'd go by, there were two gobblers that were gobbling.
At the car?
At the car. The echo of the car would go, you know, you hear the meow like that. And when it go like that, you hear both of them just firing off. And I was laughing.
Maybe that's what you need in your turkey bag is one of those NASCAR.
Hey, I did the hoot. I had the plant manager laughing his butt off because I hooted at him a couple times and had him gobbling at that too. So,
well, Nick, are you a native Floridian?
Oh, yeah.
Where were you born at down in
West Palm? 1986.
Man, you're just a young guy.
So spent most of my life in West Palm and Jupiter, and then just, you know, recently back in December is when we got over here, and it's...
And there are rednecks down there if we've got him sitting here.
Yeah, but now did you do a lot of... Was you more into the saltwater side of the fishing? Because that's what... When you get down into the South Florida area like that on the East Coast, that seems to be the big thing, is a lot more saltwater anglers.
Definitely. It's easily accessible. You got a boat. If you're lucky enough to have a boat, which we had for a while, growing up, or you know, you can get off the beach and fish, kayak and fish inshore, the intercoastal, off piers, jetties, bridges. The spear fishing is amazing. I spent a lot of time in the water.
Now, somebody was listening here and was going to take a trip, a vacation trip or something of that nature, and head down to West Palm. What would you tell them to be the best place to do their saltwater fishing?
Out of Jupiter, without a doubt. I mean, West Palm's got the Palm Beach Inlet. It's big, it's nice, it's easily accessible. But I mean, I'm Jupiter's home, so I'm kind
of
biased coming out of there. It's a sketchy inlet, but you know, have somebody professional take you out it, or somebody that knows the area, and you won't regret it.
Sounds like a great time. So when are we leaving?
My 5 days next week. Let's go. I'll be back there.
Holy 5 days! You better be safe in our area for all those lawbreakers.
You talking about Dylan going out fishing with him? You where he's talking about? You better start Dramamine-ing up now, big boy.
It's bumpy.
Well, I've been over there on the East Coast and watching the waves from the bank.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I'm watching them from shore.
You better start taking about a half a pill right now a day, and then you'll be ready to go.
Well, it'll be a great time, no matter what, if you can get out there and do some fishing. And of course, the Dramamine, I'm going to take stock in that, because if I start getting in the boat, as many trips as we got in mind to take coming up this summer, definitely going to have a couple bottles of it.
Yeah. Well, that inlet, the West Palm Inlet, I've been out of there fishing before, and I thought it was pretty cool. We got there in the morning, the boat ramp's huge. Mm-hmm. So of course there's like four boats backing in. We backed in. We went over there and went dolphin fishing in a 22-foot Key West, and before you knew it, you were out in 800 feet of water, like nothing.
No time. You can still see the shore. And,
yeah. Oh, yeah. And we were catching kings and doing stuff like that, but I laughed because I remember coming back in, and the tide had went out, and all the sandbars, of course, now are protruding up. Dude, that was just like a party.
Peanut Island.
Oh, my gosh, man. There were people there were people everywhere just parked in there. You're having to weave through boats. People were tying, they'd pull up on the sandbars and they tie the boats off. That's, and you're weaving through them trying to get up the channel, and they're right there in the channel. So it's like, what do you do?
We can make a whole day out of it just going out. When I got hired, my first 2.5 years, yeah, we're patrolling offshore, checking people fishing, make sure everybody's in compliance, and then coming right back to Peanut Island,
yeah,
and making sure everybody's got a safe driver and,
yeah,
enough life jackets, yeah, no overcrowding vessels. It's,
now,
it's
what
chaotic.
Is, what is the biggest violation you find on the boats when you were patrolling out on the waters like that? What's the number one thing you think?
Normally it's just missing safety equipment. I mean, there's, you know, flares, fire extinguisher, life jackets, throwable, and a sound device. So somebody's missing something out of that, whether it's expired flares or fire extinguisher has gone bad. So little correctable things that we usually, you know, push education on. But if you're missing a few of those things to where you should know better, then
you'll get a reminder notice.
You'll get a reminder notice, exactly.
Yeah.
Now that was one of my questions that I always had, the sound device.
Mm-hmm.
What is it's the whistle or the horn? Or
it could be a whistle. It could be electronic horn. It could be an air horn. It could be one of the whistles on your life jacket. It doesn't matter. It can't be you yelling. It's got to be something you can reliably go to. So
now, one of the questions that I always had too was, whenever I'd run my John boat or my airboat out in the bay, it would you named off several of the things: the fire extinguisher, the flare kit. Was that that would always confuse me. Now I'm in a John boat. Do I need a flare kit? Do I need that sounding device? And, you know, so those were always the thing, and the anchor. So I'd always have an anchor. Mm-hmm. I'd have a whistle, but I never carried a flare kit. But I had my boat paddle and I had my safety, my flotation. So
it's not required. I mean, it's, like in a John boat or a canoe or something like that, to where, you know, you have your fuel source that's you can just chuck over if a fire starts or something like that. It depends on the size of the vessel as well, you know. But it's not a bad idea. You don't want to be out there having something go wrong, and then you have to get like MacGyver all of a sudden and start, you know.
And fire extinguishers, yeah, do go
well,
bad.
When you're in my 14-foot John boat, I have all that stuff, and it's like, man, if I put everything in here, now it's taking up the second,
yeah,
area of the boat just to put all the stuff in place. But, you know, it's one of them things. It's, you know, you say how inconvenience it is, or what you have to go through to make it work for you. But if you ever get in that situation where you need it,
you understand why.
You'll say, man, why didn't I do that? But and I know you mentioned your age a while ago. So did you take your boater education requirements?
I did. I made agency make sure we have it, and it was a good idea to have it. So, I mean,
with that boater's education, I've not done the online course, but what is it actually? Is it a hard course itself, or is it?
It's not hard. It goes over the basics, and you get into a little more of, you know, driving, safety, overtaking vessels, things like that. A little bit of the Coast Guard nav rules and things like that. But it's a pretty generic, you know, introductory course that's anybody's going to have. You know, it's going to be real informational to anybody. It's online. It's free. There's some sites you can pay to get your boater's safety education, but if you go through, I think it's FWC and then Boat US has it for free through our website. So.
And that's anyone who's born after January 1, 1989, I believe it is.
88. So, yeah.
Yeah, because that's my son falls into that category, because I always say, well, he was born in 89, so anything after January 1st,
Wade, you're not driving.
Yeah, that's my excuse. Nope, not today. But, Dad, it says 10 horsepower bigger. This is a trolling motor.
I get them mixed up because the hunter safety one's June 1st, 1975. Yep. So you got to have your hunter safety course after that. But
I remember when they passed that, we were some of the first ones that actually took, mm-hmm, that.
Yeah,
a long time ago, Plant City High School.
Yep. My dad was actually a hunter's education,
yeah, instructor. I think your dad was one of the ones that was running our course.
He probably was. It was back in the 80s and late 80s and early 90s. And there was him, William Robinson, and, yep, Ray Broach, and there was another gentleman. I can't think of his name, but but that program, this time of the year, it's getting, you know, it's already been warm for quite some time, and there's a lot more activity. You see it at the boat ramps and the people that are got their kids and everything else. And I think it's the program itself, being that I do archery program at Trinity, that's now recognized through the FWC as the bow hunter education requirements. When you see those things, you think, man, it's kind of it's an inconvenience to you as your everyday rush life. But if you'd really just take the time and make a plan for it to do your boater's education, even a person of my age, if I went online to do that boater's education, there's so much that I probably forgot or didn't even remember how small it might be, but how important it is. Because when we do those classes for the archery, every time I do a lesson and teach a class, I think, man, you know, I remember that, but I forgot about that, or it's been on the back burner. We'll get more into the minimum requirements of the hunter side, the boating side, when we come back. But we are Being Wild Outdoors, brought to you by Load Runner Trailers and G5 Outdoors, who is fixing to open up this coming summer. Can't wait for that store. Get ready. It's going to be huge. And we'll be right back.
Eric Edmonds has created a great family hangout at the Sefner Beef O'Brady's. They go all out to support the organized youth activities and local benefits in the Brandon area. The Sefner Beef O'Brady nights are loaded with fun things like karaoke, watching games on TV, and seeing the local kids' sports team celebrating their big win. And, of course, enjoying lots of great food. Lunch prices start at just $4.99. The Sefner Beef O'Brady's is open from 11 to 11, Monday through Saturday, and Sundays noon to 10. Sefner's Beef O'Brady's is located at the Parsons Village Center at Parsons and MLK. Come on in and enjoy the food and fun.
So, I'm sure you heard the news. Social media sites are cracking down on private firearm sales. So if you're looking to sell or buy a new or used gun, or even looking to trade, do it the right way and head over to Deer Hunter Guns. Dan and his crew will give you top dollar for your used firearm, plus give you the best trade-in value if you're looking to upgrade. Deer Hunter Guns is doing it the legal way and can help you find what you're looking for. Or take that used rifle, pistol, or shotgun off your hands the legal way so you have peace of mind, knowing your firearm isn't going to a complete stranger. Go sell your firearms to your friends at Deer Hunter Guns. Stop by today and get the best deal. 2797 Gulf to Bay Boulevard, across from the original Hooters. DeerHunterGuns.com.
The Big and Wild Outdoor Safety Tips are brought to you by Sims Cranes, Florida's leader in safe, comprehensive vertical access solutions.
Here's this week's Sims Cranes Outdoor Safety Tips. Keep your family and friends safe on the water. Have an equipment checklist and be prepared before you're on the boat. Check local weather conditions before your trip. Designate an assistant skipper who is familiar with operating the vessel in case the boat operator or captain is injured. Always leave a float plan of where you're going and how long you're going to be gone with someone on shore. Use life jackets that fit each person properly before launching your vessel. Avoid alcohol. Studies showed alcohol effects are even worse in the sun and wind. Learn to swim. The Red Cross and others offer training for all ages in your area. Take a boating course and get educated. Be prepared for any situation. Also, get a free vessel safety check from the U.S. Coast Guard. They'll check out your boat and make helpful recommendations. Sims Cranes, helping you stay safe on Florida's waters.
The Big and Wild Outdoor Safety Tips are brought to you by Sims Cranes, Florida's leader in safe, comprehensive vertical access solutions.
Hey, this is Jonathan Swindle of Arrowhead Archery Shop and co-host of Big and Wild Outdoors. Here to tell you about a new product we're using at the ranch and carrying at the shop. It's Horn Max Super 20 mineral and molasses blocks. Both blocks are loaded with organic trace minerals, rich in protein, nutrients, and amino acids to maximize our southern deer herds. From buck to doe to fawn, you won't find a more complete product for your herd. Check them out at floridamineralonline.net or at Arrowhead Archery Shop. Pick up your Horn Max Super 20 mineral and molasses blocks today and start growing bigger deer.
The Big and Wild Outdoors invites you to discover Fish Hawk Sporting Clays. It's 77 acres of first-class comfort and hospitality for your personal sports shooting as well as corporate and public events. The Fish Hawk staff is always ready to set you and your family up for a memorable day of dusting clays. Conveniently located in Lithia, about 20 miles from downtown Tampa and less than 8 miles from Brandon, and is open 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday. Fish Hawk Sporting Clays offers four-person shooting carts, 12 and 20-gauge shotgun rentals, and the club also features a large covered pavilion with plenty of seating for your next big get-together. Fish Hawk will happily host birthday parties, bachelor and bachelorette parties, team-building groups, family reunions, or any group of people who'd like to get together and have fun. For more information, go to fishhawkshootingclays.com. That's fishhawkshootingclays.com. And be sure to check out the events page for clinics and classes available throughout the year.
Welcome back, Big and Wild Outdoors. Glenn Kinman and Officer Nick, the coolest FWC officer, or one of the coolest officers I've ever met.
Yeah, you'll say that to the one that pulled you. Man, you're the best, man! I heard you talk about... Are you Jonathan? Yeah, I heard you say Nick was the best. Here's your citation.
Yeah, does Nick have a last name?
They're all the best.
Yeah, we don't want to throw him out there like that.
Ah.
That's Officer
Incognito
Nick.
Today.
So this, come on, Randy. Now, this is, you've been in show business long enough. We got, it's, you got to keep the little bit of mystery out there for him. So that way, now when somebody gets pulled over,
is that why he's wearing a mask? I told him you're on the radio, Nick. You don't really need to wear that mask in there.
Face for radio.
Don't take my joke. But no,
take his joke, but don't take his face.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. But no, I could see it now. Somebody gets a citation and they read it. Nick, are you that? Are you Officer Nick? I could see it now. Of course, well, I'm hoping we have that many fans listening that, you know, somebody's going to say that.
That's right. With the warm weather that we've had and a couple of cool spells along the way, is the water really getting a lot busier now? Or,
yes, absolutely.
But before the break, we were talking about the minimum requirements for your boating operations. The life jackets are the key thing, I believe, is really – I don't think you guys give many warnings that I've experienced in the past of the – when getting my boat checked, airboats or whatever, and with my buddy Doug, that was always their biggest thing. Is first thing they ask for is not for your fishing license or registration of the boat or identification. They said, "We want to check your flotation devices." That's the first thing I always hear. Mm-hmm. We want to check this, and we're going to check that, and I need to see your fishing license. That, you know, it was always like the last thing.
You have a kill switch on your airboat?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, I'm one of those where you're wearing it. If you fall off, that it cuts it off, or
I'm going to say it like this. I'm one of them guys that sometimes when I'm thinking about it, and I'll be the guy that when I needed to have it on, like the gentleman that was in that bass boat that we see, that is the perfect reason right there. That's the best understanding of how important something like that really works. But my John boat with the – I got a 15 on there. It's got a kill switch in the wrist, and I'll put that on. But for my airboat, a lot of times it has that. But when something happens with them, the kill switch is it's pretty much it happens too quick. It's all going on anyway. But it's always good to have something like that for any boat or vessel.
Well, I remember when I had my Sea Hunt boat, and like I said, I took Lori over to Pro Marine. They do like a boater safety kind of thing for everybody and show you. The first thing before the boat even hit the water, he told her, I remember this because I was going and getting the truck and I overheard him say this. He goes, if you're standing in this boat, he goes, the first thing you do is I had the little carabiner, and he goes, you just click it right off, because we had the little small life vest on and there was a little loop. He goes, first thing you do, click this on. He goes, I don't care if you're going 1 mile an hour or 50 miles an hour. So, but it's like you said about the bass boat. If you fall out, I mean, it's a good thing to have to keep from getting, you know, prop cut, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, that's a nasty wound. But Nick, what are you going to ask? When you're checking that vessel.
First thing, I mean, it doesn't matter. Like you said, doesn't matter vessel size, whether it's a jet ski, BWC, canoe, airboat, or, you know, yacht. I want to make sure everybody's got a life jacket. So,
are you guys seeing a lot? Now, here's a question I have. Are y'all seeing a lot of those? I know I've seen a few of them. The jet skis, everybody's rigging them out to go fishing on.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of people are doing that.
That's big on the East Coast. I mean, like paddleboard kayaks and jet skis, you can do that.
Yeah.
They put rod holders and everything in it. I haven't seen it over here as much.
Yeah.
But...
Well, I've seen some of the blue water versions of them over there that you can carry like three rods and
whole family, everything.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Pop up tent. It's wild, but I mean, think about it, for over here in the flats, how much water a jet ski draws. It's not a bad idea.
Get on it. And I have seen a guy that had a jet ski with a stringer of probably some illegal fish on it. And the way he had it set up, I thought, yeah, that guy, he's just ready, because it was laying on the runner.
Yeah,
on the side of the jet ski.
Why you always got to assume the worst?
I'm just saying. Number one, I wouldn't put my fish catch right there. When you see something that looks like there's probably at least three snook on the stringer and a couple
bump
reds
over with his foot,
knocks them off and it's all gone. But I'm sure you guys have really seen some really crazy things going on and taking place of trying to manipulate the law or trying to get away with something, but. Later on in the show, we have a lady that's going to be calling in that does the Feed the Hungry program. Does the FWC when they confiscate an illegal catch like that, what do they normally do with the fish?
So a lot of the fish, certain counties have evidence destruction orders to where we can return that fish if it's alive and able to be, you know, released alive and healthy. We can release it back to the water. A lot of other counties in different areas don't have that evidence destruction order to where we actually have to seize the fish as evidence. It's got to go into a bag, chain of custody, property tags. I got to issue you a receipt that I'm taking that fish. Goes in a freezer till your court date.
And then it comes out in the courtroom and thaws out?
No. It's happened a couple times to where they want to see it as evidence, but when you're dragging a 40-inch snook to court, you know, it's the judge isn't going to appreciate that as much.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll have pictures, we'll have photographs. That fish will still be documented in our evidence facility, and we donate it to, if it's past its prime, which a lot of it has freezer burn, whether, you know, it's been in a freezer a few months or longer than that till after trial, it'll go to like a wildlife rehab center, you know, and some of these panthers and bears and eagles eat surf and turf every night, just better than you and I.
Yeah.
Of snook and
man,
lobster.
It seems like it's just such a waste. Once when you see sometimes a large harvest of fish and it's confiscated, mm-hmm. You're talking like, you know, just coolers full of fish, and it seems like it's such a waste. Number one, for somebody to do what they've done to start with, but secondly, whenever you confiscate it, you have to seize it for that and not be able to use it to feed like the hungry, feed the homeless, or those food banks to donate that too. But I understand the legality side of it, but also think, man, why couldn't you use that? Because you already know you got it documented, you got your photograph.
Okay. As long as the court process goes pretty quick, we can get it out and start making that an option, maybe.
Yeah. I just thought, you know, what a great thing. And later on this morning, that's some of the things here in the state of Florida that we don't hear. But if you go to the northern states where you got the hunters feeding the hungry.
Hush program, and you got all kinds of stuff.
And when you look at the overall, the amount of food that's been provided for those type of shelters and everything, it's millions of meals that have been donated by a farmer or an outdoors person. And mm-hmm. I think it's such a great program when you go out of state and hunt. And you can donate it when you go to a processing facility. They say, all right, what would you like to do with it? You can donate it, and these are the programs, and these are who we're going to feed with it, or we can process it however you want. And sometimes the selfish side is say, well, I want it. But, you know, and then there's that voice in the back, man, maybe you're going to feed somebody.
Or give them half of
somebody.
It. I mean.
I have donated them in the past, and but here this past couple of years here in the state of Florida, my girls – they really don't eat that much of it, so I always end up giving it away and, you know, get it processed. My mother and family and stuff like that. But I'm thinking, man, why couldn't there be a better program or better system here in the state of Florida where we have those facilities and locations to donate, and we know that it's going to a local charity or a local food bank that's going to feed our neighbors. And so, man, anything on that for us, or
let's get it started. I mean, it's something to propose. And
I know in the past, you know, Al's one of our big sponsors here. Love the guy, makes great stuff. You know, Rick Shirley, we've done some stuff with him before. Great guy. And I know I've talked to them, and I know, like, talked to them about starting kind of a hush program kind of thing down here. And I know several other hunters have come to the shop, and several people we've talked about this. A lot of it, too, is the FDA regulations and all that stuff with the meat itself. I mean, it drives me nuts, and this is something maybe you can speak to. The fact of it's like – and maybe sometimes I ask questions I shouldn't ask, but it's like I told one of the FDA people that I know. I'm like, so, okay, you're telling me it's okay for me to go out and shoot a hog – take it, bring it to these guys. They process it. I can take it home and feed it to my family. And as long as I meet the minimum, you know, I know I'm not sure exactly what the minimum is now, but I know before it was 130 degrees for 60 seconds.
Yeah.
You're good. You know,
something like that.
And I think now it's 160 degrees.
Yeah.
And, but I mean, I was talking to them about it, and you get to these points where the guy goes, well, yeah. And I'm like, so why can't I, like, to what Glenn's point is, why can't I bring this hog or bring hog is the perfect thing in the world, because God knows you could go out like this weekend. We had one feeder that had probably 20 of those 40 to 60 pounders that if you had a 12 gauge with buckshot in it, I mean,
you know, there's six or eight for you.
You're feeding the community.
There's six or eight for you there. And just take them and get them. I mean, take them up to somebody like an Al or, you know, Rick or somebody like that and say, here you go. Grind them up and give them these people. But then, of course, the guy from the FDA said it was a legality thing on the backside with if they take those to a homeless shelter or something like that, and, of course, somebody gets sick, then you're opening up another can of worms.
Yeah, exactly. With the feral hogs, it's just you're opening up a can of worms with brucellosis and other things that are just – they're nasty stuff, and that's why there's regulations on transporting them live, and, you know, there's a really high standard of cooking that out of them and cooking your meat to a high standard. So I understand that angle of it, but.
Well, you did bring it up that maybe we need to bring that to.
Bring it to the table. I mean, the commission changes rules every 6 months. It's a, you know, it's a stakeholder-driven agency, and it's things like that are worth the discussion. You know, because it's for the greater good.
And as Bill George says, they do, contrary to popular belief, they do listen to
100%. All those surveys go out. We were just talking about a little bit earlier.
And but that'd be a big. I know that sounds like it's something easy when you talk about it. Just donate. But you got to have those people that'll come on board. And I know Al. I don't know for sure if he still does it. I know that he did say that it's been that he would still take it. He's a drop off point, but he definitely. Would be a place to go ahead and get it implemented and have that. You just got to have the local people involved to where you'd have a facility that could that could process whatever you bring them, secure it properly, get it stored in the right temperature so it doesn't spoil, and then have those. I know it sounds like a simple thing just to ask, but there's a lot to it that's more involved, and there's a lot of detail into it. So, but it'd be a good, something good to talk about. Maybe Jonathan in his spare time. Could start a local chapter here.
Can I go ahead and say something real quick to something we just received on my cell phone?
Sure.
No, Bill, I'm not asking that question.
There's no telling what kind of question Bill is. But, Bill, if you couldn't make it into the studio this morning, we appreciate you listening.
Oh, Lord.
But don't send Jonathan any text like that. It's
my gosh.
He's single focused right now.
What do you do? Seriously? I mean, come on.
He's itching to tell us about
it. I'm not the shiny object guy, okay? I mean,
he's ready to you can look at it. He's itching to share his turkey.
Squirrel!
And everything else that he's done this past week, he's left us high and dry for a couple of weekends. Missed out on a great clay shoot last weekend with Trinity Sportsman's out at the Fishhawk Sporting Clays, by the way.
Beautiful place.
I will say, Nick, have you ever shot Sporting Clays?
Oh, yeah.
It is a. Last year was my first time ever really getting involved, other than shooting them around in the backyard and front yard, wherever it was at.
But addicting.
You're exactly right. It's one of them things is the first time I'd done it, I shot a 39 out of 50. And then
beginner's luck.
But you know what? I thought that was kind of low. But when you see the people around and you see these guys that are shooting 48, 49, because we had a couple of those guys in those numbers this past weekend over there, and – when they show up and you see the ammo box pouches and
they've got the pouches, everything, shotguns,
you know, I was like, well, that guy, he must be a veteran for sure at it. And I carried mine around in a plastic bag, my shells. So they always say, yeah,
stuck
that guy,
them in my pocket.
Yeah, that's a newbie. Yeah, we ain't got to worry about him. But I ended up, Braden left on us too because he was headed out to California.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had four shots, you know, four slots for the team. So I put in the ghost shooter and for Braden, and I shot that round. And I ended up at the end of the day, I shot 41 for Glenn and 41 for ghost shooter. So I shot 82 out of 100 clays.
That's pretty good.
And I thought, man, that is good. And, of course, Bill, he shot 33 and Carlos shot a 30.
My biggest thing with clays, it's like that tournament we did at when we had the thing at the Beast Feast. We had the first tournament there. And I average about 50%. My problem there is that's the truth. Is I get bored with shooting. I'd rather shoot at dove, or I'd rather shoot at quail, or I'd rather with clay targets. It's just something. I can't explain it. Archery shooting, I'm the same way. 3D, like the 3D shoots and stuff like that. It's fun. The only I'll be blunt honest with everybody. The only reason that I go to a 3D shoot. Any of these local 3D shoots, it's just the people. It's just a chance to see people that I don't get to see, or people you don't get to talk to on a regular basis or anything like that. I'm not, it doesn't thrill me
as
much as
Well, that's because you weren't shooting with us. If you get out there, we make it more of a competitive nature thing, you know.
Really?
Yeah, you know, Bill, he would throw some curves at me, you know, be talking about something, and you know, just trying to be that distracted.
Get you distracted,
guy.
And all of a sudden, he hits the button and throws a clay. So what you do with that, big boy?
Competition's fun, and you get those some of those places like Fishhawk or Okeechobee Shooting Sports, where it's coming at you from every different angle. Yeah. And that's keeps you on your toes.
Fishhawk, and it's a beautiful place. It's a great family, and it's just you can go out there and shoot, but you can go out there and just relax.
Well, we've been asked again if we could possibly do a remote out there for the Cattlemen's fundraiser. I guess they're coming up in May.
Yep.
And so I told them we'd definitely be interested in and being out there and being a part of that. So maybe you can make that one and you could try it out. But
I'll probably have to since I knew the Cattlemen's president.
Out of 82 of those 100 birds that I got, the clays, I did ask Mr. Hinton. I said, so is this like a beginner's setup or is this like a media? And he says, yeah, we really tuned them down.
We turned them down.
I was like, man. But I still got an 82 regardless. We are Big and Wild Outdoors. Hour number two. Hour number one in the can. Hour number two coming up. If you got a question with that you'd like to ask our FWC officer, 888-404-1010, 888-404-1010.
Now's the time.
410-10 for those who are just getting started. And thank you, Load Runner Trailers and G5 Outdoors. Thank you there, Jonathan. And we'll be right back.
The Big and Wild Outdoors.
You heard of the following outdoor brands? Wild Game Innovations, Avian X, Plano, Barnett, Flextone, Ameristep, Fraybill, Zinc Calls, Tenzig, Evolved, Halo, Bloodsport. Well, if you recognize these brands and you use them, we have an opportunity for you to take your passion for hunting or fishing to the next level. Plano Synergy, the owner of all these brands and one of the leaders in the outdoor industry, is looking for passionate and skilled hunters and anglers to join our field staff team. Our staffers work retail events, do seminars, and educate store employees and customers on our products and how effective they are in the field and on the water. They are our brand ambassadors. If you are over 18 and want to apply, please request an application today at joinstaff@planosynergy.com. Once again, that's joinstaff@planosynergy.com.
Did you know the biggest Ford truck dealer in the entire southeastern United States is right here, close to you? Which dealership? The answer shouldn't surprise you. Brandon Ford is the largest volume F-Series truck dealer in the Southeast, and the numbers don't lie. Brandon Ford sells more F-150s, more Super Duties, more lifted trucks, 4x4s, and diesels. And when a dealership sells more, there's always a reason, like the guaranteed lowest Ford truck prices, or one of the largest Ford truck inventories in America, with over 500 trucks available and on sale, or their award-winning sales team with years of experience who knows these trucks inside and out. Every day when businesses or customers need a truck, they choose Brandon Ford because Brandon Ford stocks more, sells more, and sells for less. So when you're ready for a truck, come see us at Highway 60 and 301 in Tampa, the largest volume Ford F-Series dealer in the entire southeastern United States. 24/7 at BrandonFord.com. If you want to pay less for a Ford truck, that's our business.
Hunters and collectors will tell you that if you want the friendliest, most laid-back, packed full of firearms gun shop in Pinellas County, then you've got to go to Deer Hunter Guns. If you want Civil War guns, antique guns, new guns, shotguns, pistols, knives, or even that hard-to-find ammo, you got to make a trip to Deer Hunter Guns. If you're looking for something out of the ordinary you just can't seem to find, stop in and see Chuck. The man is a bloodhound when it comes to finding stuff, and he will find it. So go get what you need at Deer Hunter Guns in Clearwater. It's just across the street from the original Hooters on Gulf to Bay.
Join Mark Charles Thursday nights at 11:05 for the MMA Talk Show featuring guest appearances by UFC fighters and the top MMA analysts, and takes your listener phone calls to get your take on the latest current events in the world of combat sports. Tampa Bay's business address, Money Talk 1010, takes off its tie and relaxes with Mark Charles and the MMA Talk Show every Thursday night at 11:05 p.m. MMA Talk Show highlights and interviews on OutsideInterferenceRadio.com.
Hey, this is Jonathan Swindle of Arrowhead Archery Shop and co-host of Big and Wild Outdoors. Here to tell you about a new product we're using at the ranch and carrying at the shop. It's Horn Max Super 20 Mineral and Molasses Blocks. Both blocks are loaded with organic trace minerals, rich in protein, nutrients, and amino acids to maximize our southern deer herds. From buck to doe to fawn, you won't find a more complete product for your herd. Check them out at floridamineralonline.net or at Arrowhead Archery Shop. Pick up your Horn Max Super 20 Mineral and Molasses Blocks today and start growing bigger deer.
WHFS Sefner, WQYK FM HD2 St. Petersburg, 103.1 W276 CX Newport Richey.